and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 271. I am your host, James Gilmore, and joining me live on Twitch, the Twitch stream. We're literally beaming live into computers and faces and homes and digital watches and whatever else has the capability to do this sort of thing, is Peter Wellington.
Hi.
Hi there. Hi there, Peter. How are you, Peter?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Peter good, is he?
Yeah.
But also, nestled between the two of us, as you may have noticed, is a newcomer to our show, Mr. Rob of 148 Apps.
Hi.
Hello there. If you're not familiar with the kind of network that we have, we're all part of Steel Media, which is this company that owns a bunch of different sites. Obviously, AppSpy, you know who we are. If you're an AppSpy subscriber, you know me and you know Peter. Peter also works for Pocket Gamer, as do I. That's a sister site. Also, sister site is 148 Apps, which focuses, if I'm right, exclusively on iOS stuff. Is that correct, Rob?
That is correct.
It is, yes. Yeah. So we're all part of a great big media family, which is really boring tech talk.
We all love each other.
Yeah, unconditionally.
Sometimes too much.
Yeah. It's candid, but that stays off the web cameras, as far as we're concerned. But we said we'd have new people in, we promised, and we're kind of fulfilling our promises. So we had Harry last week, Rob this week, and it's going to be a great big hoedown. And this week, there is much news. Interestingly, not just iOS stuff, as we usually cover, but there's a bit of 3DS, a bit of Vita, a bit of Ace Attorney news, possibly.
Oh,
I know.
Oh, yeah.
Perks Peter up no end. He likes all that
Onto
stuff.
The colour.
I know, right? So, without further ado, let's have a look at the updates. First on this week's updates, we have got Sonic and Sega Transformed, which has just been announced that it's getting some new characters, specifically Wreck-It Ralph, off of Wreck-It Ralph, and Metal Sonic. Which might bring a smile to your mouth, because you like all that Sonic CD stuff, don't you?
Yeah, it's good. The remakes are really good. Enjoy Sonic CD.
Yeah, well, apparently he's going to appear in the roster of unlockable characters. You'll also get additional tracks as well, including the beachfront resort from Outrun Bay.
Oh!
Which is... That's a bizarre marriage of stuff. No,
that's
isn't
amazing.
It?
No, the best thing about Outrun, absolutely, is that those beach sections. As soon as you start going inland, you say, I'm not bothered, I don't care. But magical sound shower on the beach with those sort of multiple levels of 2D art flinging towards the screen in the 90s. That's good.
That's an impassioned plea there from Peter. He's excited. Rob, are you an Outrun guy?
No, not really.
You're not an Outrun.
I'm going to make it difficult for everyone.
Okay, but you like races, surely?
You can't
do if you don't like Outrun. Okay, fine.
Well, apparently you can play Outrun stuff in Sonic now. That's good. You also get an asteroid-filled Galactic Parade track, so something a bit sci-fi as well. Plus, there's a new Boss Cup challenge and World Tour mode, both of which let you compete with players from all around the world. I don't know if that's leaderboard-wise or literally in real-time multiplayer. I only played Racing Transformed for a bit. I'm not sure if it went multiplayer or not in a real-time way. Either way, free updates for your Sonic there. That's always nice to hear. What else have we got? Plague Inc. has introduced Mega Brutal difficulty, which is, well...
looks, sounds hard.
Sounds intimidating to me. I quite like this when I played it. Peter, you started playing it and then you got a bit sad, didn't you?
I got sad about the idea of there being a global pandemic.
Which I find, like, amusing. I can't believe that you were in any way worried or concerned about this. You know it's a game, right? You know this is a game site and we talk about games.
What?
Rather than actual pandemics, yeah? Okay. Fair enough, covered that. Yeah, but it made Peter massively upset. Me, less so. But this time, you get a massive amount of new difficulty. So you get four additional scenarios, as well as this whole extra difficulty mode, which bumps it right up to brutal. So if you're, you know, well experienced at this and you're used to causing massive plagues all over the world, then here's your extra challenge. Oh, yeah, this is a good one. It's kind of an update, but not quite. Because... if you've played XCOM on whatever format it might be, iOS or on the PC or whatever, then you'll know it's brilliant, because everyone loves XCOM. But if you're an Android user, you might not have had the opportunity to get your hands on it. However, that opportunity has just come your way, because it has just gone live on Android this week. Which is good news if you have an Android device with a bit of storage space on it. because it's 3.6 gig to download. And also, it's going to cost you either $11.99 if you're in the US or £7.14. Because Google Play loves those weird, non-specific price points. They can't do 99s or anything. They have to go for £7.14 and 3 shillings. We reviewed the mobile version very, very highly. We thought it was cracking, because basically it is.
We did too.
Did you as well? Oh, fantastic. See, were you a fan of it particularly? Did you play it yourself, or was someone else reviewing it for your site?
Oh, that was all me.
That was all you. Outstanding. Well, and I'm not surprised that you were a fan. I think it's fantastic. There's no way around it. And because it's one of those strategy games, it does actually work well on the mobile platforms. The touchscreen sort of suits it. So if you do happen to have an Android device and you haven't got it yet, now is your chance.
Now they can start bringing the enemy within to iOS and Android.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I actually never played the update. How did that fare?
Oh, it's fantastic.
Yeah?
What's it do that's different?
It's like all the little elements that Enemy Within adds just sort of make it feel even more complete than Enemy Unknown did. Like, it's the same game, but with a whole bunch of extra stuff piled onto it.
Right.
You've got, like, the cybernetic augmentations for soldiers. You can build the giant mech troopers, but the resources you need to build those, you have to like rush to find on the maps.
Oh.
So there's that toss up between playing it safe or trying to get these resources that allow you to build like human tanks later on.
Oh, well, the campaign starts here then, basically, to get that.
Pretty much.
Catch up on the first bit first, so go and grab that on Android if you feel the need. And you should! Still can't get used to playing the theme tunes. Still makes me laugh. We're doing this live on Twitch, and we did it once before, and, you know, you play the themes live, and we don't usually do that.
And actually, because we are live on Twitch, if you're listening to this on the actual podcast feed, then hello. Thank you for
listening. And apologies in advance for any references we might make to the videos that are playing, like, underneath.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you're not here, you're missing out on the amazing videos that are streaming. And you're also missing out on the chat. And I am looking at the chat at the moment and watching people chatting away about all sorts of bits and pieces. And it's brilliant. So, yes, do say hello and do get chatting in there and whatnot. And you've missed out if you're listening to it on the podcast. Shame on you.
Shame, how dare you? Don't insult the loyal listeners who've been with us for ages.
Sorry, okay.
They're awesome. We need them. Don't be silly. Yeah, but they can also join in live if you want, so you'll catch it like an evening in advance. Yeah. Anyway, new stuff. Yeah. So, if you're a 3DS owner, you might have played Theatrhythm Final Fantasy.
Mm.
And if you're an iOS owner, you might have done the same thing. Because it did find its way over to the iOS platform with an awful lot of in-app purchases, as I remember.
Mm-hmm. It was free.
It was free to download, so in fairness, that's okay. And you did get a bunch of songs you could play without spending any money. But if you wanted to get the additional material, and there was a pretty sturdy library of extra songs, wasn't there?
Loads.
Ranging from all the classic things from your Final Fantasies and whatnot, which is kind of hits people right there, you know, right in the heart. Because you're like, you know, you hear the Cloud Strife songs going in the background, you hear Yuna's theme, and you go, oh, roll a little tear for Aeris, maybe. so cold. Did you play either the iOS or 3DS version of this one, Rob?
I tried to get into it, but it just, I don't know.
Not for you.
Really do it for me.
Is it because you're not a rhythm game guy, or did the whole Square Enix Final Fantasy thing not work for you?
I'm a fan of both those things. I think I just couldn't get past the initial stages and wasn't a fan of the free-to-play structure for iOS.
No, that's fair enough. However, if you did enjoy the first one, then you might be pleased to hear that Final Fantasy Curtain Call is going to be coming to North America on the 3DS later this year. So, we heard about it like last year. It was confirmed for the Japanese market, but they hadn't confirmed that it was going to be coming into the West anytime soon. But we have just received confirmation that it will be coming. There are going to be 221 songs.
That's a lot of songs.
That is a lot of songs. The first one had like quite a lot of
a billion,
and they were kept being updated with additional stuff. So, but then they've got these, you know, the whole Final Fantasy saga to mine songs out of. There's also 60 characters which you can play as from the entire Final Fantasy series. They've also updated a few things for the game itself, so you get additional game modes, one being a versus battle mode that lets you fight with other players, but you do need a couple of copies of the game if you want to do that. And there's also a quest medley mode, which apparently turns Final Fantasy songs into short, medium, and long quests, which you can then share with friends.
Weird.
I have no idea what that means.
Who is your... Because I was thinking about this when I was reviewing it. There are so many different characters in it, but I do think to myself, I did wonder, like, do I have a favourite Final Fantasy character? And what does that say about me if I do, and or I don't? And the whichever one I were to potentially pick, what does that say about me? Because I thought to myself, oh, I quite like the little white bear chap, cat chap, Moogle.
The Moogle, the Mogs.
The Mogs, yeah. And I thought to myself, I think they're brilliant, but I think I like them because I quite like Hello Kitty. Like, that, I think that's the reason that I like those. Like, do you guys have, like a favourite character, or is it just like, oh, it's Cloud?
I don't know.
No. The lead characters often you find to be, like, the least sympathetic characters in the franchise, aren't they? They tend to be a bit emo and a bit whiny and a bit like, oh, I've lost my friend and my brother and my father's dead.
Cloud especially.
Yeah. In that very,
though, so.
In that Luke Skywalker kind of, I want to go to the Tashi station. They sound a bit whiny, don't they? Whereas you're actually looking at other people and going, hey, you're kind of cool. I like 13. I like the cat, tiger, dog thing out of Final Fantasy VII. Remember him? He was in Red 7, Red 13, something like that.
Red 13, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I like him because he was, straight to the point, didn't say an awful lot because he was a tiger or whatever. It looks sort of badass. I like him. No emo coming out of him. He wasn't whining about his dead pet chinchilla or something. He was a solid. He was.
I think my favorite Final Fantasy character would probably be Vivi from Final Fantasy IX.
Who's that? Which one's that?
He's the little black mage kid.
Oh, is he the one that? Oh, I nearly just gave away a massive. Okay, I nearly just spoiled the entire game.
That one.
Oh yes. Okay, brilliant.
Also, I felt the need to point out that Cloud is so much of a loser, he thought he was someone else for, like, the first half of Final Fantasy VII.
Doesn't he dress up as a lady at one point?
Yes.
Odd sort of polygonal lipstick and stuff like that. like the least convincing lady ever.
I'm not even sure they had enough detail to put the lipstick on him.
Although, in fairness, that was probably one of his more interesting and sympathetic moments, I think. Like, well, at least he's got half a sense of humour there, but no, not so much. Sticking with this 3DS news, though, if you're an Ace Attorney fan, then you might be excited to know that there's going to probably be, I'm going to say probably because it's a bit alleged at the moment, a follow-up to Dual Destinies, which came out last year, I believe, it was a bit of a change for the Ace Attorney series because it was the first one where it went 3D and the first one where they started using voices properly instead of doing the kind of like little noises and bits and bobs. Now, I forget because we did review it, I think. You didn't do it, did you, Peter?
No, I gave it to Mike Rose.
That's right. Was he impressed or not?
I don't think he was particularly. It's a good game, but it's one of the least sort of exciting of the Ace Attorneys. It's not. It wasn't kind of helmed by the Ace Attorney guy anyway.
No, he took a break for that one, didn't he?
Yeah, and apparently it sort of shows. It's really sad because I got really hyped about it, and then the review came out, and we were like,
Well, I mean, I hadn't played much of the series, but I did start playing Ace Attorney on iOS when it came over, those HD remixes, which looked a bit weird.
A little bit.
Yeah, I mean, are you a 3DS guy, Rob?
Oh, yeah.
You presumably have either seen or had a go on the original games, and obviously being 148 Apps guy, have seen those HD remixes. What was your take on the updated, let's say, visuals?
It didn't really bother me. It looked a little odd, but it's really just kind of started to forget after like a couple of cases. Just kind of, it looks different, but not so different that it like detracts from anything. I thought it's
didn't take
basically someone just like traced over the original images and vector art or something.
Yeah, pretty much. I agree. I mean, having not spent a lot of time in the originals, I wasn't in tears or anything. It didn't bother me that much. It just looked a little odd. I've seen people do those HD things before. It looked a bit weird to me. I didn't think it was the best job, but still playing the game transferred onto iPad very well. It's funny because it walks a strange line, that series, between being sort of quite serious in terms of subject matter, because it's about these quite brutal murders.
Yeah, they're all murders.
Yeah, some of them are really quite nasty. And at the same time, it's massively wacky and daft, isn't it? Everyone's kind of pulling out these strange, like manga wide-eyed faces and making jokes about
names and stuff.
But more than that, like a lot of the complexity actually comes from the comedy. It's because I think a lot of people look at those games and take them very much on like a face value and just go, "Oh, well, it's clearly a cartoon. Therefore the comedy is this." Mm-hmm. And I think they probably assume that it's a bit sort of slapstick and wacky and whatever. But actually, some of the jokes are really clever plays on words. Like some of them are a little bit childish, like the whole Larry Butts joke. But like some of them are. You have to know very specific things about certain bits of Japanese culture to go, oh, that's really funny, or to like look at like bits of the legal system or medicine or whatever it is. And there are little jokes in there that are sort of hidden away for people who have all of that sort of knowledge already there. It's a really, really complex game that isn't afraid to be a bit silly at times. I quite like it for that.
Mm, no, it's certainly got lots of character. Let's certainly give it that. Well, as to say, apparently the guy who was the original chap behind the series, like his name is Shu Takumi, I think his name is. Mm-hmm. He's actually coming back for this new game. That's the rumor. We should say that it's been taken from a page of Famitsu magazine, which has been scanned in and uploaded by Tiny Cartridge. So it's like sitting there online at the moment, and so we haven't got a physical copy of the thing in our hands, but it looks like there's a very good chance that it will be heading our way. It's supposed to be called Grand Turnabout Trial: The Adventures of, now let's go for this, Naruhodo Ryusuke.
Mm-hmm. You just offended a whole bunch of people, I imagine.
I'm sure I did. That's the best I could do, I'm afraid. Rumours are that it's set in the Japanese Meiji period. Meiji? Mm-hmm. I'm not sure which.
You just offended a whole other bunch of people.
I know, I'm on a roll. Yeah. And it should be... that takes place somewhere between 1896 and 1912. So it's that sort of time period. So it's kind of a ye oldie. If that's the case, surely it can't feature any of the series... So, stalwarts, no?
As far as I understand, that period of time is right about the decline of the samurai.
Okay.
As in, it became illegal to carry swords in public. From what very little Japanese history I know, that's around that time.
And so right up until 1912?
It was legal. Wangasari. I believe. Okay. And the game itself is going to feature a sword-wielding hero who is related to Phoenix Wright.
Oh, he's going to be the great-great-great-granddad or something.
I believe that's why he's got a sword at the time. So those two things are kind of connected. And I guess maybe law and legality and stuff like that was... Because that was the time when Japan went, like, really had this huge cultural shift. Mm-hmm. One of its first sort of cultural shifts. So, yeah, like, I think that's kind of the setup for it. I'm really fascinated because I really like the Phoenix Wright universe.
Well, it'll be a big departure. I mean, I know they've had some slight side games because we argued about the number of true Ace Attorney sequels because there's like three, but there's actually about seven games or something, five or seven games.
Yeah.
But if this is going to be like a weird prequel, that is kind of interesting. It'll be a huge departure, and at least the courtrooms will look different. It'll be like a shack or something, or a tree. It'll be up a tree. I'm going to carry on offending Dr. People. Yeah. Because why not?
They could do a Shin Megami Tensei 4 crossover.
Oh, let's do it. Well, petition.
They've already done the Leighton crossover, haven't they?
Yeah.
Which apparently is brilliant. Like, I think one of our guys who used to work for our sites, Mike, he's basically said it's the best game of either franchise. He reckons it's the best Ace Attorney game and the best Professor Layton game.
Mm.
I haven't got anywhere near it yet, but sort of high praise indeed. Regarding this one, if you like Dual Destinies and you play through, then you'll probably be excited about this one. We will keep you posted as to when we get a release date or confirmation, any more information about it. Also, news-wise, something that I'm fairly psyched about... Monument Valley, right? Now, have we all played this? I'm going to double check.
I have.
You have? Fantastic, Rob. Peter, no?
No.
No.
Okay. It's not me this time.
Yeah, I know, right? Get in. Well, Monument Valley is A, brilliant, and B, it's been out for a little while, but not too long, only like a couple of weeks or so. If you're uninitiated, it's a simplest way to describe it is it's an M.C. Escher lithograph come to life. But what it is, it's a maze-based puzzle game in which you have to get to the top of a tower by manipulating platforms and areas of this tower to create kind of impossible walkways. Walkways that shouldn't really exist according to perspective, but when you twist the tower and twist the platforms, it kind of flattens everything onto a 2D plane and makes those impossible structures, like the bit in Inception where they're wandering round and round that staircase again and again, and the M.C. Escher lithograph, the one with all the stairs that everyone's used to seeing in student bedsits and stuff.
Yeah,
So it works like that, and it's really beautifully done, incredibly elegant, I think. Like, lovely soundtrack, very well considered. Not very long, but a really joyful kind of experience. Did you feel the same way, Rob, or did you have queries?
No, I felt the same way. For me, it was basically, I just thought it was amazingly beautiful, and it was over a lot sooner than I wanted it to be.
Yeah, no, that's pretty much the biggest criticism that we could throw at it and say it's kind of short, and it wasn't especially tough either. That was necessarily, you know, a terribly bad thing, because just the experience of playing through was incredibly enjoyable. Mm. But people did say, like, it's not... And the last level was the only one to really throw up some, like, ooh, bit of a head-scratcher. But apart from that, you kind of sailed through. Well, if you loved it and wanted more, the developer has turned around and said that they are, in fact, working on additional levels. Apparently, they had a whole bunch of ideas for the game, but they didn't want to just throw in like levels willy-nilly and just have them randomly put together. They wanted it to fit within the context of the narrative. It's quite a slender narrative, but there is one. So they decided to keep it to 10 levels and keep it kind of nice and neat and tight, and you could race through it in an hour or two. But what they said was, this is a quote, they said, "The only thing we presented is a complete story within the game, which we didn't want to mess with. But what we don't quite know yet is how to present the new levels within that narrative." They're very keen, apparently, not to break it.
I mean, is the narrative particularly explicit? Or?
Well, I mean, there are story moments in which you stop, because you're guiding this young girl to the top of all these towers, and each time she gets to the top, she takes off her hat and this kind of little cuboid crystal, which changes every time it appears. And she occasionally talks to this ghost thing who's saying, like it's in the video, like, why are you here and what are you doing and why have you come back? So there's this history. I'm not going to spoil the story, but there is a narrative, but it's not... I wouldn't consider it a story-driven game, really.
Okay.
Yeah, no.
But they obviously, in their eyes, you know, it does have a narrative and it had a form that they didn't want to meddle with. So they are going to add new stuff, but they don't quite know how yet. Whether it's going to be like additional DLC where you download individual levels, or they make a little mini story out of it, they're not 100% sure. What they do want to do also is bring it to Android. So if you haven't played it yet, and because you are an Android-owning person, it should be coming to Google Play sometime in the near future. They're still working on it at the moment, so don't expect it to turn up immediately or anything. But it is in the works, which is like particularly good news. We're all iOS people, though, here, aren't we?
Unfortunately, yeah. I'd like an Android device, but just, I haven't got around to getting one yet.
But you haven't played it yet, so you've got no excuse.
No.
No, you should really get on it, because I think you especially might like it, because you like games that aren't too scary or nasty or make people ill.
What are you saying about me?
Well, you're easily startled, aren't you? You're like a little rabbit.
Yes, I am easily startled. The other day, this is genuinely true, I was out walking, and I was like literally going to one of the local shops or something like that, and I had my headphones on, and I turned around, and a small child, probably about 6 years of age, was stood in the middle of the path with like a little scary mask on, you know, like you might get in a like might cost a pound in a dress up shop. And I wasn't really looking where I was going because I had my headphones on, and I looked up and saw it, and I literally jumped. I didn't make a noise, but I went like that. And the child saw me and like lifted up the mask and went, "What?" Just made this face and just like, "But you're like an adult. Why? Like, how did that genuinely..."
Was it a Simba mask, Peter? Did you get scared by the Lion King?
Haven't we got more things to talk about?
Than your terror, yes. Well, also, is that in addition to it coming to Android, they are considering it bringing it to PS Vita as well. So clearly the success of the iOS version has caused them to want to branch out and share the love with everybody, which is a cracking idea. And I think I couldn't really find many people with a bad word to say about it other than the length. So if they are addressing that, then that can only be a good thing. Be sure to check back with both Pocket Gamer and AppSpy and 148 Apps, because we'll all keep you posted on this stuff as it comes. And there are videos up on all the sites, no doubt. But check back and we'll tell you when we get the release dates and exactly what form these exciting new updates are going to take. Outs and About this week, Third Eye Crime, which is what they call a stealth game with a psychic twist. So, we played this a little bit on the stream yesterday, didn't we, Peter?
We did.
And I was enjoying it with slight caveats. Have you had a go at this one yet, Rob?
I have not. I tried to check it out at PAX, and it's like the first time I went by, they weren't set up yet, and then just got too busy after that.
Oh, really? They're being a bit coy. Okay, well, you can see, if you're watching the stream, a video of it underneath us at the moment. It's going to be a playthrough that was done by Pocket Gamer, so you can see what the game looks like. For you listeners out there, it is a top-down film noir-style comic book. Rather than you playing the role of a detective, like you would normally do in these things, you're actually taking on the role of a criminal who has psychic powers. And it's presented from a top-down perspective, and what you're trying to do is sneak through these museums in order to steal artifacts, diamonds, paintings, that sort of thing, and get to an exit without being caught by the guards who are working at the museum. Now, in order to do this, you have to avoid their little cones of vision. You know, in Metal Gear Solid and stuff like that, where they have those visible cones that show you where they're looking. You can see that protruding from the chests of these guards. So in order to make it to the end of the level in one piece, you need to sneak past them, ideally without alerting them at all. But if you do alert them, then you have to run off and hide somewhere. The psychic element comes in when you're trying to avoid where they're going to walk. So, for example, once you alert them, a little red kind of bar appears, which shows you where they think you are. So you can use that information to go, well, if they think I'm over there in that corridor, then I'm going to scurry off to this other corridor and then sneak past them when they're not looking. So that's your kind of psychic element. First thing to say is it looks really nice. If you're watching in the videos below, you can see it's got a very nice, say, comic bookish style. The control was very smooth. You kind of put your finger on the screen and then drag outwards, and a little arrow appears, and it draws a little line from his chest, which then bends around corners, so you can drag him around a corner and then leave him, and he'll carry on walking the way that your finger dragged him. A couple of things I thought were a bit weird is, once you get spotted, you carry on sneaking. You're walking at a very slow pace. You can see it in the video. He's kind of creeping, creeping, creeping. And then you get spotted, and he just carries on creeping, creeping, even though he's got, like, two people in pursuit behind him. Which I thought was kind of incongruous. I expect, surely you break into a trot at that point, or, I don't know.
Well,
you...
the point we were sort of, well, the point that we sort of almost touched upon with the stream was that in Metal Gear Solid, Snake starts running. And in fact, that's the only way that you can make him jump, isn't it? Like, you get spotted, and then he dives into the ocean again, where he came in the original Metal Gear Solid. That was the only way to make him do that. But yeah, like the idea that you just can't, like, run. I guess I can understand mechanically why that all makes sense, you know? Like, because you want everything to stay at the same place so that your player can figure out, well, this is how I do things, you know? Because also, if you can run, then surely the guards should be able to run as well.
Yeah, so everyone kind of just sort of toe-taps awkwardly around the museum. It was a little kind of odd. Where do you stand on stealth games, Rob? I know this is kind of a love-hate genre for a lot of people. Some people just, if there's no gun, they're not interested. What's your feelings?
It depends on the stealth game.
Yeah?
Like Splinter Cell Chaos Theory, Metal Gear Solid, not Twin Snakes, but... No. The original Metal Gear Solid, even Mark of the Ninja.
Oh, yeah.
You know, great stealth games. I do enjoy stealth games. I have kind of a love-hate relationship with Deus Ex Human Revolution because of that whole boss fight business. But
there are a lot of...
I really like playing stealth.
A lot of people took issue with that, because if you were powering up as an action guy, if you played the whole thing through violently, then they weren't so bad. But if you were trying to be stealth, which, let's be fair, if you're playing Deus Ex, you should be trying to be stealth, because that is the cool ninja thing to do. And then the boss fights would appear and say, shoot him with guns! And you'd be like, but I am crap with guns! I have been sneaking for 10 hours! Yeah. And you got kind of your ass handed to you. Yes, this one seems to be... I like the look of it. It's very easy and accessible to pick it up and play. It's understandable, you know. The controls make good sense, and the presentation's exquisite. I'm not 100% sold on the gameplay. I also noticed, when I played back through it after the stream, you can walk through the guards without them noticing.
Huh.
The very first thing I did was trying to avoid his cone. I was like, can I walk? I can't walk behind him. So I just walked straight through him. And that was apparently fine, which I thought was, like, that's not so good, you know?
No.
Like, all that attention to detail. Psychic yeah, and what, invisible, apparently.
Well, that's it, then. Yeah.
You can pass through solid objects without them noticing, which is a neat trick. There are also little power-ups that you can use as well. There are these things that you can, like, freeze the enemies. So, again, using psychic freeze powers. But you only have a limited number, and those can be bought with in-app purchases as well, which always flags up a bit of a warning nowadays.
A little bit.
Yeah. It's a premium game. It's out right now. It's £1.99 or $2.99. We're going to have a review up very, very soon, and I'm not sure. Because like, I saw the trailers, and I was really excited. I played it. I have reservations, so I'll be interested to see how this one turns out. Next up, though, we have Leo's Fortune. Did you have a go at this one, anybody?
I feel like you're a teacher and I haven't done my homework.
You haven't done. Rob's been good, though. Rob's clearly has had a look at it or something, yes?
Yeah, I haven't played the official release version, but I got to preview it a couple weeks ago.
Oh, nice.
It's very good stuff.
Yeah, I've got this recommended to me by Rob, who's one of our like reviews editor type chappies.
Not me, other Rob.
No, other Rob, sorry, I should distinguish the two. UK Rob. He said, like, have a look at it, because you see a screenshot and like you see the lead protagonist, and you're like, okay. But he said, no, trust, it looks really good and it plays very well. And it really does. Played it in the stream yesterday. Again, you can see it in the video below if you're not watching. Then you take control of a small, fluffy creature, like circular fluffy ball with a moustache, called Leo, who appears to be some kind of Russian oligarch or something. He speaks in a Russian accent, and he was very rich and has lost all his money. And so what you're trying to do is get it back. Now, weirdly, the thing this game reminded me of, oddly, was Sonic.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
You know what I mean? It's all those little tunnels that you're going through.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
all the little, like, around the loops and stuff.
And, yeah. And the fact that you're collecting gold coins, which substitutes nicely for rings. And I got a distinctly Sonic vibe for it, but it's incredibly good looking. Like,
oh, it's so gorgeous.
Yeah. It's an unusual looking thing. The animations are astonishingly smooth. The environments are very, very richly detailed. They have a slightly interesting take on the jump mechanic, where rather than him having little legs and leaping to the air, he kind of inflates, he expands. And this can be used in numerous ways. You tap the screen and he'll kind of puff up and jump into the air. But also there'll be devices and objects that he has to manipulate. So, for example, there might be a lever very low to the ground, and he can tuck himself underneath it and then inflate, and that'll flip the lever up and, you know, activate a platform or something like that. So it's quite ingenious use of the mechanics. How much of it did you play? Because I'm only about sort of 4 or 5 levels in, Rob.
I watched several levels being played from the later stages, and I played like maybe the first 3 from the first world. But yeah, even though each section of levels has the same theme, they all look incredibly different.
Yeah,
which I thought was really amazing.
I got a couple of those moments where you're coming out of one of the tunneled sections where it's very wooden and walled in, and then suddenly it's like you're in this underground forge and this fire in the background and everything. It's a real like atmospheric shift, and I was like, wow, that's kind of awesome. Monument Valley was another game where you would do something, you'd flick a switch, and suddenly everything would start to transform, and you'd get a genuine kind of wow moment. You can play 40 quid PlayStation 3 games and not get a single one of those. And
you get a wow. I paid 40.
I shot the man. yay me! But with those games, constantly, like, all the way through, it was a short experience. All the way through, I was going, wow, that's awesome! Look at that! Oh, twisty turny. It really opened kind of like the floodgates of awesome. And this one, visually speaking, certainly very, very impressive. And it was very smooth to control. And there are 2 control options. You can either use a sort of touch based interface where you slide your thumb left and right to guide him left and right, and flick up with your right thumb to jump, or you can replace those with buttons. I tried out both. I actually think the button version works better.
Ooh.
Usually I prefer gesture stuff if you're going to do something. Well, usually gesture controls are better, but with platformers, it's a bit iffy sometimes. I felt the same way about Limbo. When they brought Limbo onto iOS, you had to do that, you had to flick up to jump.
Oh, yeah, that was rubbish.
Okay.
Oh, it was.
Didn't bother me at all.
I really hated that flick mechanic. It just felt really, really unnatural. But I think that's because I played the PC version.
Yeah, well, I played the Xbox version when it was out, but I found it a little bit awkward. Jumps where you have to flick instead of just tapping, it seemed unnecessary. Like, why do a gesture when you can just tap and he'll jump? But I mean, that's just a personal preference thing. You've got the choice here to do either, and I'm going to carry on playing it. which is not necessarily something I'd bother doing with all these games, because we've got a lot to get through. But I really enjoyed it. You can get it right now. It's £2.99 or $4.99. Apparently, there's a fairly solid chunk of content, because it is, you know, not the cheapest of games. Look at the hands-on videos we've got up on both sites. And again, the review will be up very soon for this. And I have a feeling it might be quite positive. Next up, this is one I don't really know anything about. Suit Up, it's called. Let me expand the video. Yeah, I don't really know a great deal about this. So, apparently, I'm looking at the video now with you guys.
This is hot, off-the-cuff action here.
Sure, gonna get some... why not? Is that a suit pun, off-the-cuff action?
Yeah, deliberate, clearly.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, anyway, so, have you played this one, Rob, just in case? You know something that I don't?
I have not even heard of it.
Fantastic. No, all right, then we're all on the same page. So as we can see from the video right now, it's a one-touch platformer. What it's saying to me is it's very sort of simple retroist block graphics. You're taking control of what looks like a little robot dude or something, and going through a series of different environments, some of them being like vertical platforms where you're just leaping upwards, some of them being more traditional side-scrolly levels, which look like they might come out of, I don't know, League of Evil or something like that. There are also bits where there are large circular platforms spinning, which remind me of something like They Need to Eat, I think that's what it's called.
Oh, yeah.
You know that one? Where you're jumping off the side of spinning things. Apparently, though, rather than using on-screen buttons or joysticks, you tap the screen to determine the apex of your jump. And then the robot, like, legs it over in that particular direction. And according to our newsman, Harry Slater, usually ends up dead. It's interesting. I'm not going to pass judgment on it because you have to wait and play. But it's available right now, £1.49 or $1.99. So that's Suited Up. Yeah, interesting. Now, we won't linger on this for too long because I think Rob's going to talk about it in greater detail later.
But, am I?
Well, maybe. Wayward Souls.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Fair enough. Well, that came out last night as well. It is a top-down action... roguelike, if I'm right in thinking, is it? It's permadeath stuff. So
yes,
yeah, randomly generated dungeons that you're running through. 16-bit-ish graphics, so it looks a little bit, you know, Amiga or SNES era. And I've heard like ridiculously good things about this.
There's some internal chat at the moment.
The review, I saw in our little office Skype window. The review hasn't gone live yet, but It sounds pretty, like it's pretty good.
Yeah.
I played a bit of it. I rolled my eyes a bit because of all the zombies, but...
Yeah, you do though, don't you?
That's a normal reaction, but I'll let you talk about it in slightly more detail, Rob, later. But you can get it for £2.99 or $4.99. They have a slightly interesting payment system here where they say that's a launch price, £2.99, $4.99. Every time that they update the app, they're going to raise the price by a dollar.
I don't think that'll last.
No?
Say for example, it's super popular, right?
Yeah.
And there's five updates. At some point, you start pricing out a new market. Apparently, the review has just gone live.
Oh, really?
Gamer. Yes.
And
we can tell you that it got a much coveted 10 out of 10. Do not give those out.
No, that's why I was kind of raising my eyebrows, because that never really happens around these parts. We're notoriously... Well, people accuse us of being harsh with our reviews. We're pragmatic.
Yes. Oh, sorry. That one. Yeah.
But, so do you know who reviewed it? Was it Harry or was it...
Harry, I think.
It was Harry, yeah. He took to it like the Dickens. Rob talked about it later.
Yeah,
£2.99, $4.99. We'll try and get to the bottom of why he might have thought it's so good. Moving away from iOS, just for a moment, because Pocket Gamer is a sort of multi-platform site, they like to get involved, you know.
Unlike you guys over at 148 Apps, where it's all like, all about these, isn't it?
Eyes for iOS. Yes.
Let's talk about brilliant other platforms.
Yes, because you're a Vita owner, aren't you, Peter?
I am, I'm one of them, yes.
Have you got one of those, Rob?
Yes.
You do? Wow.
Just because the site only covers iOS doesn't mean I don't play anything else.
No. I like to check, though. I don't want to assume everyone has a Vita, because, there's only about six of you, and, you know, you're a select group of people.
Oh, yeah.
So, if you do have one, you might be interested to know that Ragnarok Odyssey Ace will be out in Europe next week. We're getting this one to you slightly early. Oh, look, proof! Proof on the stream that Rob does, in fact, have a PS Vita.
I do.
Amazing.
Harry was talking about his, actually. I'm quite impressed by the number of our lot of colleagues who do actually have a Vita. Because I think it's a lovely piece of kit.
Got my Persona 4 Golden...
Yeah. Very nice. Very nice. You see, I was so... The main reason I was tempted to get it is because I'm a Wipeout fan, huge Wipeout fan, and it was like the last, potentially the last Wipeout game ever.
Do you want to know what's really extravagant?
Go on then. Two Vitas? You... He just one-upped you, Rob. He saw your Vita and he raised you.
It would have been more impressive if one of them was the white one.
Oh, that's true. I need to get
are they both the normal Vita, the old Vitas, now. Or is one of them one of the new ones?
No, they're both the proper good old
OLED screens.
OLED ones. Proper screens. I need to get the white one, but yeah. It's lavish. Ridiculously.
Am I going to have to run around and I have to dig out my PSP now?
Yeah.
So I can hang with the cool kids.
I've got my N-Gauge somewhere.
PSP right here too.
Yeah.
Absolute result.
Oh wait, no, that's right. Sony flipped the Switch again and all the PSP games don't work on it anymore.
That's a bummer.
That was a real pain because those games were like, some of those games are absolutely amazing. Like,
oh yeah.
Like PSP and PS1 games that are just like absolute classics.
Yeah, they had some crackers, didn't they?
And they just went, oh yeah, you can have them all. Oh no, wait.
On PS4, like I saw something today where they had turned on the old downloads for like the PS1 games, and then
that's it. Yeah,
turn them off again.
Yes, that's it. Exactly.
Yeah,
it's completely preposterous.
what are you doing, Sony?
Now, one of the things that we've got in the chat, there's a question about why the hell you would need two Vitas. And I do
that's a valid question.
I do and feel like bad. I should probably answer that. The way that the Vita region stuff is set out, it makes it a massive pain. To swap between Europe and America. And because I'm the handheld editor, it would be good for me to have access to both. Right. So I basically have two bits of...
Is it because you wanted to... You thought they were in 3D and you were confused about how 3D works?
Yeah,
and
I just put both over my
sellotaped
way.
One to each eyeball and...
It's incredible. It's incredible.
Four man's Oculus.
So this Monster Hunter clone that we're going to talk about.
How dare you? How dare you, Willington?
It's true, though. It's so true.
Yeah, apparently it is true. I don't have the Vita, I haven't played it, but obviously we're looking at the visuals and stuff. And at the moment, there isn't a Monster Hunter game available on Vita, right?
No, not yet.
So,
no, just the PSP version that you can play on the Vita.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, I hated that. That Monster Hunter Tri or whatever it was?
Here's the thing. Right. That game is amazing
with
on the
two
Vita.
Sticks?
On the Vita because you can change
the controls,
the face buttons, so that you can use the right stick. So actually, it becomes a really good.
That
monster.
Was the problem. Like trying to turn the camera around in that game was impossible on the Vita. It was a horrible on the PSP.
Do the claw.
Yes.
Ah, grim.
But that was awful. I couldn't. And it's kind of a tough game anyway. Where you
I knew somebody
grind.
Got RSI doing that. Like actually got RSI doing it, and it was just like, oh, ridiculous.
No, it sucked. Well, if you haven't downloaded that, then so the alternative, basically, because there was no official Monster Hunter game on Vita, was Ragnarok Odyssey. It came out. I'm going to say, have we had it for a while? Or is it the other way around?
So what?
I think the US, either the US or, and possibly Japan territories had it.
So
and we haven't in Europe.
So Ragnarok Odyssey Ace,
right,
is like a deluxe version of Ragnarok Odyssey, which has been out for a couple of years now.
Okay,
and Ace has been out in America for a couple of months, I want to say, but Japan's had it for.
For yonks, okay.
Like loads of time.
Well, we're going to be getting it in Europe on Wednesday, April 30th. So it's going to be coming next week, which is good news. We actually gave it a fairly good review. Our quote is refreshing, straightforward gameplay, like fun combat systems, sharp graphics, all that kind of stuff. And you got cross-platform play as well, which is always welcome.
And that's from Dina. And he knows his business.
Apparently, yeah. Yeah, Matthew Dino is one of our American correspondents. He knows his 3DS and Vita biz. He's all over it.
There was also Phantasy Star Portable, which is kind of similar.
Yeah.
That's another PSP game.
It strikes me that all of these games that are doing this, like there's God Eater Burst as well, and there's a whole bunch of other games trying to take the Monster Hunter crown, right? And it's a good thing to do, absolutely, because competition breeds even better games. But the thing that strikes me is, none of these competitors have got the online element done yet. And the only thing,
neither has Capcom.
Well, no, absolutely. And this is my point. No, I completely agree with you. Like, as soon as a game comes along that goes, right, this is mechanically as good as Monster Hunter, but guess what? It's not a complete pain in the ass to get online and play with friends. That's it.
Yeah.
Like, problem solved, right?
Supposedly Monster Hunter 4 that's coming to the 3DS is going to have Wi-Fi multiplayer, supposedly.
It better do.
I thought the whole point of, certainly on the PSP, you could meet up with three people and do it wirelessly, right?
Do you want to hear what is... So, Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate on 3DS.
Yeah.
If you want to go online with it, I believe you have to hook up to your Wii U. And there is a special app that you download on the Wii U, and it can port through that. But even better than this, I don't believe it's possible for a 3DS to connect to a Wii U that's online to play other people. So you can't have one 3DS with one friend and a Wii U, and the Wii U is online and it's giving all of that information over to play other people. So you can't get together in like smaller groups. You have to either all be in the same room on the 3DS and one Wii U, or you have to all be online playing Wii U. Like it's
okay.
To play the PSP version online, you had to download Ad Hoc Party on the PlayStation 3.
Oh, I completely forgot about Ad Hoc Party. That was the worst.
Oh, man. Oh,
amazing.
Well, I mean, it functioned. You know,
did it?
It did. I've used it to play Monster Hunter several times, but they really, I don't know why they couldn't have put online multiplayer in Monster Hunter Ultimate for the 3DS. I mean, Capcom made Resident Evil Revelations, and that had online multiplayer.
Yeah.
So, I don't get it.
Preposterous.
Well, this is apparently a little bit easier to handle, from what we understand. What they say is it's going to be a download-only purchase, however, for at least if the US version's anything to go by. You need 2.2 gigabyte on your memory card.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good thing the Vita memory cards are so cheap then.
I know. So cheap. And you can use any memory card you want, not some ridiculous proprietary memory card that only works with Vitas. Yeah, Sony are good like that. Their proprietary memory card thing, they're on another planet where that stuff is concerned. UMDs, anybody? Like, mini discs? They just come up with all this media that never catches on. They always think it's going to catch on.
This is also a company that apparently has some kind of backwards compatibility master switch that they can just flip on and off at will. So
yeah, they're arguing, like you say, those PS1 and PS2 games will be playable on the PS4. They're saying maybe not the PS3 because it had the weird cell architecture that will confuse the new thing. But that they could totally do it.
I'm totally getting upset.
Well, don't be upset, Peter. It's all right. So we don't know how the European version is going to handle exactly of a Ragnarok Odyssey Ace, but it should be fine if the American version is anything to go by. It's going to be out, say, end of this month if you are in the EU. And finally, for your new releases, the first two episodes of The Walking Dead Season 2 are coming to Vita as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, which is good for you, Peter, because it's actually not good at all, because you're not going to play it still, are you? Ever?
No, never.
That's a shame.
Because you're a scaredy cat.
Yep.
I am slightly torn about this, to be honest with you, because I enjoyed the first episode. I've enjoyed the second one as well, but don't think it works quite so well playing as Clementine, personally. Like, the strength of the original series was all about you taking control of that guy, taking charge of Lee, and having to look after Clementine. He was your ward, and a lot of the thrills and the worry and the terror and the fear of that game came from making sure she was okay. Whenever she'd wander off and do something, you'd be like, no, where's she gone, and trying to make the right decision in order to save her life. Now you're playing as her, it's a very different perspective. And I don't know, it's understandable because she was such a popular character, but I mean, I know Peter hasn't played it. What's your take on the second season, Rob?
Haven't touched the second season yet. I've been trying to work my way through the first season still.
Oh. Just
lots of things on my plate.
Fair enough.
Basically.
Well, that's interesting because we haven't touched on the first season for a while. Now, the hype was unbelievable at the time and everyone jumped up and down and went mental about it. What platform are you playing it on? Are you doing it on iOS or...?
Primarily, it's been on the iPad.
Okay. And have you found, now you've listened to all the hype and sort of lived through a year of everyone saying it's the best thing ever, has that spoiled your playthrough or are you enjoying it?
Oh, I'm definitely enjoying it. I mean, I'm still really early on. I think I'm only a third of the way through the second chapter.
Oh, okay.
No, I've been impressed with it.
Oh, good. I would always worry that games that are hyped that much, you then sit down and play them and go, oh, I don't know what this all the fuss is about. But I did enjoy them. Not 100% sold on season two, but if you are a Vita-owning type chap, you can now get the first two episodes. If you buy them individually, they're £3.99 or $4.99. But you can also buy the season pass, and that's usually about £10 or $14, something like that. And that just unlocks everything, and you can get access to all the other episodes later on, which, if you're a fan of the first series, is, you know, probably the way to go. Come sit upon the throne of games. Yes, it's the throne of games, which is the bit where we all tell everybody what we've been playing this week. You didn't get to hear the cool sting, but we're all too familiar. So as a new inductee into this particular thing, what you have to do is you have to sit on the throne, right? Of games, yeah, and okay. Then you tell us about a game what you have been playing over the course of the week. So, Rob, go for it. The throne is yours.
Okay, I think the video's screwing up on me here.
Yeah, you got a little stuttery at that point.
This is what happens when you do it live.
What you're trying to say there was that it was Wayward Souls you'd been playing, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes, excellent. So, what's your take? What's your experience so far?
I've been really enjoying it. I was a big fan of Mage Gauntlet. And this is very much like Mage Gauntlet, but much more refined, has a lot more elements to it that I enjoy. I like the roguelike stuff. Still trying to unlock those extra characters because it is a tough game. Uh-huh. You got to be really careful how you, like, each character plays totally different. So you want to be careful and make sure that you use their abilities and items effectively. But it's just been, it's been a really good time.
Yeah. I mean, I played it sort of very briefly, about sort of 10, 15 minutes. It did feel weirdly polished. I mean, it's obviously made to look like a retro game, and that's pretty much par for the course now. Everyone's doing this whole pixel art graphics thing. There's a big wall of these games that get released every week, of pixel arty things that are emulating old Zelda-esque games or, you know, things like that. So you tend to go, oh God, another one of these. However, there's little flashes of stuff that looks like beyond 16-bit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like lighting effects from the little swinging lamps that are on screen, and they cast actual light. And the same thing when you're doing those kind of power attacks and flash attacks, you get little flashes of effects that you think, ooh, that's actually a bit next gen. That's quite nice. But it's all sort of framed within this very 16-bit looking experience.
Yeah, and there's the way that like some of the objects in the environment get destroyed and little bits can get kicked around and stuff. Yeah,
people have made comparisons online. I've only read little bits and pieces, but Spelunky has come up in terms of the roguelike way in which you play it. Do you think that's a fair comparison, or is this different?
Yes and no. I mean, it's like Spelunky basically because of the roguelike angle. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I'd say it's really that much like Spelunky.
Right.
I guess to an extent, you know, you have to learn what the best strategies are for specific creatures and encounters and stuff, but because it's so random, I don't know, it's less about environment traversal and more about just finding your way through each room filled with enemies to the end of the floor.
And you say there's six different characters, is that right? You've got like a warrior and a rogue and a mage and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Are they all available from the top?
The warrior, rogue, and mage are available from the start, and then there are three other characters that you can unlock by completing the different floors. Okay. In the dungeon, there's like a bronze, silver, and gold, and if you complete the bronze, you unlock one character, complete the silver, you unlock the other.
And how long do playthroughs take? I mean, I'm playing an awful lot of FTL at the moment, and those sessions can last anywhere from, you know, like 15 minutes if you're out of luck to hours. How long do these things kind of last?
I'd say it's about the same.
Yeah?
I mean, getting up to that first boss, which I still haven't beaten, took me maybe like 20 minutes to a half hour.
Right.
And then I died, okay. And then I started over again, and then I made it to, like, the third floor and died, so I couldn't even make it back to the boss.
Because these are roguelikes, and this one is procedurally generated as well, isn't it? So the levels and the dungeons are randomly generated, like FTL. Yes. There is that element of chance when, like, FTL, you'll come out of the dock, you'll jump to the first planet one time, and it'll just say, oh, look, your engine's blown up. And it's like, oh, right, brilliant. Or half your crew's been killed. And just, like, in the very first jump. Or, this, equally, you might jump into something and you encounter a ship which has got the best weapon in the game in it. And so suddenly you're off to...
It's too early for you to afford it.
Yeah, I know. That is a killer. The run I'm on at the moment, which I'm on about like sector 6 or something. And it's because earlier on in the game, I stumbled across, oh, look, it's the best weapon in the game. I happen to have enough money to buy that. And so now the one where you draw the little line along the screen and it just a beam cuts its way through several rooms at a time and kills people in like one or two strikes. And it's so satisfying. But that was the first time that happened to me. All of my runs prior, that, you know, that hadn't happened. So there is that slightly randomized element to it. But it does make it kind of very, very replayable. In terms of the creatures, yeah. First thing I ran into when I'm playing this game was a bunch of zombies. And I went, oh, yeah, more zombies. Does it get more varied than that? Is it a better kind of bestiary than you might expect?
From what I've seen, yes. I mean, there are definitely more enemies the deeper you go in the bronze section of the dungeon. Mm-hmm. I hate those freaking bats, though.
They're bats. But,
no, I mean, there's more to it than just zombies. You'll start coming across, like, these golems and... like giant robots and stuff. Then there are the other sections of the dungeon that have totally different enemies that I've seen in screenshots and videos but haven't made it to yet. So.
Okay, so they're still waiting for you then.
Yes. Yeah, there seems to be a decent amount of variety.
Safe to say it's a recommendation, you'd say?
Oh, very much. It's really cool. I mean, there are like little incremental upgrades you can make to the characters with the gold you save up from each run. Mm-hmm. But that's just going to give you maybe a slight edge. Just simple things like your energy recharges a little faster or you get more health from health potions. But right. It's just something really cool about finding one of those forges that lets you pick one of two options to upgrade your equipment. And you can kind of strategize in advance that way and mm-hmm. then hope you play well and not die before you get to the boss.
Always helps. I read that somewhere. Well, it's a solid recommendation from Rob and a platinum award, a 10 out of 10 from Pocket Gamer. And that doesn't happen.
They're incredibly rare.
Yeah. So strong recommendations from everybody. If you wanted to get it, you can get it right now. Like we said, £2.99 or $4.99. Wayward Souls. Okay, I am going to speak next very briefly. This is kind of a cheat because it's one of the things I've been playing on the AppSpy stream, but I want to talk about it because we've been playing a lot recently for obvious reasons. The Wolf Among Us.
Okay.
Because I don't want to cover ground, but if you've watched the AppSpy streams of this, you've been seeing me play through it for like about 4 hours now at this point. And I played through the first chapter before and everything. We're on to the third chapter now. But I haven't talked about it on the podcast. I'm sort of slightly falling out of love with it as I've been working through. I understand that the third episode, which I've just started, really picks up, right? Good. But, the first episode I was quite taken with because it introduced you to the world and you suddenly saw that vibrant new environment with all the incredibly bright, vivid colours, and I liked the fairy tale concept of this sweary fairy tale in which people are running around glamoured to look human, but underneath it they're actually wolves and, you know, pigs and all that kind of stuff. And this nasty film noir, dark, grungy, sort of grimy underbelly using these fairy tale characters, which are a nice juxtaposition. It's based on the Fables comics, if you're not familiar with the franchise. And I was like, yeah, this is kind of fun. And it's using that very similar Walking Dead type gameplay with the choosing character options and they slightly affect your outcome. So I was like, yep, this is a nice little change from the Walking Dead, similar to, but a different universe. Second one felt less so. The second episode, having played through it, I didn't feel like I did much like that was of any consequence. I felt much more like I was passive, like I was sort of watching it unfold rather than any of my decisions having any kind of serious impact. I mean,
okay, so there is a thin line between adventure game and game book. Game book's maybe not the right word, but like virtual novel.
Yeah, you're
visual
right.
Novel, I should say.
Yes, there is a crossover, and one is obviously clearly supposed to be more interactive than the other. And it still played out interestingly. It's still well shot per se. It's well directed and looks the part, and the story was interesting still. But I found myself incredibly, I don't know, I just thought, I felt like I was watching what was going on, and I felt like the decisions I was making didn't really add up to very much. So it was a dip. And I tried not to look at the reviews for it, first of all, and having now gone and looked at them, apparently people felt the same. The second episode did take a bit of a nosedive in critical consensus. But I've also read that the third episode rockets right back up and is apparently blinding. And we've just started that on the Twitch live stream, which we're doing on Tuesdays, same time as this podcast, 5 in the evening if you're in the UK. So I'm holding out hope that it picks up. But, you know, just mentioning The Walking Dead earlier just made me think of it. And I was like, yeah, I'm not as sold on this. What I'm really interested to see is what they do with A, Game of Thrones, and B, Borderlands.
Yeah.
How are they going to make Borderlands a story-driven game? Because it's a shooty, grindy game.
Maybe that'll be it. Do you decide to shoot this guy? Or do you want to shoot this guy, left or right? And then you go left or right. Or you do nothing.
You can play as Claptrap.
Oh, that would be amazing! That would be amazing!
I assume by amazing you mean incredibly annoying.
Oh, I love Claptrap.
No, oh, really?
That's my favourite. Yeah, he's brilliant. He's lovely. He's adorable.
Oh, no, he's just loud and obnoxious. Come on, let's be honest.
Oh, I love him.
Loud and obnoxious is adorable.
Yeah, exactly.
Fair enough. Well, yeah, you can obviously download all the episodes of Wolf Among Us at the moment, but yeah, I'm holding out judgment till the second episode, I'm going to have to say. Which leaves us with Peter. Peter, what have you been playing this week?
Yes. Trials Frontier.
Let me try and pull up a video of that while you talk. Go ahead.
All right, then. It is very divisive. So the chat on Pocket Gamer has been a bit... Comments have been like, I don't want to play this because it's free to play, and some of those sort of comments on AppSpy have kind of mirrored that. But there's also been kind of balance there as well. And I don't know how it went down on 148 Apps. Actually, how did it go down on 148 Apps?
I didn't end up reviewing it, but the review was basically like, yeah, it's free to play, but it's really fine.
Yeah, yeah. hands down, like, I'm the free to play guy, really. I really enjoy free-to-play. Obviously, PG's got a big spectrum, and so is AppSpy and Warframe. It's got a big spectrum of people who like lots of different kinds of things, and I'm one of the people who is in the sort of, like, free-to-play field. I love that kind of stuff, because I like, you know, building games and social games and all those sorts of fluffy games. So a free-to-play Trials game, which I like the Trials series, immediately struck me as being something very entertaining, something I would be very interested in seeing. But I also didn't really know how it was going to work out. So obviously, we've talked about it before on the podcast and on AppSpy streams and that sort of thing. Mm. I went to go and play it in Gay Paris and played a sort of early version. And it was really, really cool to play, but that sort of energy system was really awkward and stilted and just really naff. The released version is brilliant. I think it's much more easygoing than that earlier build. I think they've balanced the sort of fuel thing. It takes that core Trials gameplay and puts it onto touchscreens incredibly well. It's not got nearly as much finesse as the 360 PC PlayStation versions. It hasn't got that precision that you theoretically can get out of it, where you can very accurately position the weighting and sort of the body of your rider. But I was thinking about this while I was playing Frontier, and I must have put, I don't know, 15 hours into it now?
Really?
Yeah, seriously. Wow. Like I was thinking about this, and actually, the way I played Trials was very much like left stick, full left, like left stick, full right. I was never very precise with the whole thing.
That's true, because... You can sometimes lose the nuance of these things because it becomes binary on the touchscreen. You're either just holding left or holding right. But you're right. Like, very rarely do you do tiny adjustments.
Yeah, like, it's only the super, super top-end Trials hardcore that are doing any of that sort of thing. and that's not me. And I genuinely feel like it's a really great proposition in terms of everything. Like, in terms of value, the free-to-play thing is... I think it works really, really well. There are moments where you run out of fuel, but if you level up, you get a full, like, refuel.
True. Yeah.
You can pay, I worked out, like, basically you can double your time with the game. You get an extra 50 fuel counters, which is like another 10 goes, basically, for, I think it's like 8 or 9 quid, which is like half the price of the premium products, the Trials Fusion, which has just come out. So if you really want to extend your play, then you can do that kind of a thing.
But there's always going to be a limit, though, isn't it? Even if you extend it'll still run out eventually.
Yeah,
right?
it would have been nice if they'd sort of gone, okay, give us 15 quid, you've got access to all the fuel that you want.
Yeah.
That would have been quite nice. But, you know, otherwise there isn't too much of that free-to-play shenanigan activity going on. The world is beautiful. It's like the steampunk post-apocalyptic. The colours are very, like, oranges and greens, like really lush greens. The scenery is really thematic. Like the actual obstacles, I should say, is really thematic with the scenery. So you'll be going through these decrepit cities and all of the buildings will be angular and, you know, these towers have sort of toppled and you'll be like jumping off them as straight ramps. Then you end up in the swamps and you've got to deal with more curved overgrown mushrooms that you have to drive over. And like curved surfaces provide this really different experience to drive upon. When you go up into the mountains, you get really big peaks, which again, that's another trick that you need to bring to your arsenal of playing.
Yeah.
And it's really, really just brilliant. It mimics those games really beautifully.
And you mentioned that there's been a kind of kickback from a lot of people because obviously a lot of people would have liked a premium game in which they could have just played for everything.
It's because it's a premium franchise.
Yeah, which is fair enough, and yeah, I understand. And absolutely. I tend to lean to in that camp as well. I'm not the hugest freemium guy, but I'm not one of these people who decries it completely. And to be honest, having played a bunch of freemium games recently that are really offensive,
yeah,
and some premium games which use freemium tactics in them, which we've talked about before. Card Wars, Adventure Time, which I took huge issue with. And what is the other one? The Roller Coaster Tycoon 4, with all the cooldown timers, even though it costs $5.
Yeah,
that just bang out of order. So that, like, when you play that, then play this. This is pretty generous as far as free-to-play games go.
Yeah.
It really is one of the kinder ones. And I know it's easy to just go, oh, it's free-to-play, it's awful. I don't think it is awful. This is actually okay.
No. I think it's really, really good. And the one thing I'm genuinely very upset about at the moment is none of my friends really are playing it. Like, so none of the people on
my
game.
You've got no people to beat on your
essentially. So I'm not getting any of those little, like, pop-up menu things that sort of go, oh, you've just been beaten on this thing. And so I'm sort of starting to kind of go, oh, like, it has got to the point where I do need to grind out for certain items to make my bike better.
Okay.
And this essentially means that you get them through this sort of spinning wheel kind of a thing. You have to complete a level and then spin a wheel.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And that gets a little bit like, you know, it's not a paywall at all. It's just go back and play these games. And actually that works kind of well to the trial structure. But because I haven't got, like, friends at the moment that are playing it, some of that desire to go back and beat those scores is diminished a little. But I think genuinely, if unlike me, you're not like a Billy Nomates, then, you know, I think that the game would really shine with that, all of that additional stuff. So I've been playing it for, as I say, a stupid amount of time.
It is a long time.
Yes, I thoroughly recommend it.
Okay, well, thumbs up there. I think it got a relatively kind of kindish, about seven.
Seven?
Yeah, which is, you know, for a free-to-play
game. Seven is good.
That's good. That's it. Not too bad at all. There are far worse free-to-play games. And even if you, you know, are put off by the wall, you'll find actually you can play it for a good hour or so before you get kicked out. So, like, at the very beginning. So just play it for a little bit and see if you like it.
So, really quick side story. I downloaded a Hello Kitty world builder the other day.
Yes.
Because,
you have issues.
Just let's skip over that. So it's free-to-play, completely free-to-play. And one of the things that it does, so you know how, like, free-to-play games can be egregious with energy and all these different things. The thing that this does is absolutely brilliant. As soon as you start the game, as soon as you actually go into your world-building section, it pops up a sort of, like, little interstitial ad.
Right.
And you go to, like, collect a thing, and it will immediately take you to a completely different game because it's an ad. So you just tap on it. And there's no way of getting around it. So, like, you open the game up, you go, oh, what's this stupid ad thing? I couldn't find a way of closing it, so you just have to tap the ad and go to this ad. It's a totally legit Hello Kitty game as well. I was just like, what the hell is this, Sanrio? What is this?
It's
unhappy.
That's a bridge too far.
I deleted it, so that's gone. But
that doesn't happen in Charles Frontiers.
No, it doesn't happen in Trials Frontiers, so this is good for
you. We can all agree. That's okay, then. Fantastic. Yes. All right, then. So, of course, our recommendation there, and definitely Wayward Souls might well be the game of the week. So keep your eyes out for that, ladies and gentlemen. And that brings us to the end of the podcast. Quite a lengthy one, this one, because it was all live and complete with funny noises and broken videos. But that's live for you. If you've listened to it, thank you for staying with us through us talking about things you can't see. And if you are with us on Twitch watching us, thank you. It's only the second time we've ever done this, and I think we're going to start doing it more. So get used to seeing it on a Thursday or every other Thursday. We'll do one of these things. Come and get involved. Come and talk to us and ask us questions, and we'll, you know, hurl abuse back at you, because we're nice like that. Huge thanks to Peter and to Rob for joining us from over the seas for the first time. I'm sure it won't be the last we see of you. We'll be back with a slightly different lineup for the podcast next week, as always, and possibly back on Twitch as well in the not too distant future. So thanks for listening, everybody. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Bye.